The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Well, I must tell you, I come to you today with a very heavy heart. I'm glad you're with us. I was gone for 5 days. My wife and I had a beautiful getaway. We used to have a little river place on the Columbia River near Chelan, and we made friends with our next-door neighbors there. And they came over here for dinner a couple of weeks ago, and they said, hey, we're going to be up there September 9 through 13. Why don't you guys come up and visit us? And it was just lovely. I've mentioned before that that area of the Columbia River, right between Chelan and Douglas counties, it's my spiritual place. There's no place on earth where I feel more connected to this planet and to my spirituality than when I am just silently floating on the river. So, you know, brought the bicycle, brought the Sea-Doo, and then I was very fired up to get back to work in today's show. I'll talk to you a little bit later. While I was gone, this is always very nice. While I was gone, we got some ratings. And I try not to talk too much about ratings. But in 26 years of doing this show, we had our biggest monthly rating in our history. And I'm so grateful to you, and I'm so humbled by the fact that, and in fact, I'll share some interesting stats with you. It appears that the Dory Monson Show is the most listened to local radio news talk show in the United States of America right now. So it's just been a fantastic few days. Needed time off, hadn't taken much time this year, went someplace beautiful, great friends, fun activities, great news, and then working on today's show. And we do have some heavy, serious stuff for today's show, but we're kind of used to that. But we just got some information right before going on the air, and let me share that with you and get some breaking news here.
The Big Lead, breaking news.
Often the question has come up, it used to be a kind of a staple of talk radio back in the 90s when they were first going to caller driven. There was a question that you could ask that was always guaranteed to fill up the phone lines. And that is, whose celebrity death affected you the most? I think I'm getting my answer this early Tuesday afternoon. As just a few minutes before we went on the air, Nicole called me. She knows how fond I am of this person. But comedian Norm MacDonald just passed away, just 61 years old. And somebody, you know, I talk about how I just feel so connected to the planet when I'm on the Columbia River. This was somebody who I did not know personally, but who I was just absolutely connected to in so many ways. I just thought he was the funniest person imaginable. We'll play you some clips a little bit later this afternoon. We're just getting this news in right now. But a couple, 3 years ago, my wife and I and another couple, we planned a trip to Las Vegas specifically because Norm MacDonald was playing there and we wanted to get really good seats, which we did. It was an absolutely fantastic performance. It was a great show. He was a brilliantly, just whip-smart guy. He was probably, along with Don Rickles, I would say Norm MacDonald was the greatest panel comic of all time. And the panel comic is somebody, first you come out and you do your 6-minute stand-up set, your prepared routine out on the stage. But then, especially back in the Johnny Carson days, if you really liked what you did, he'd give you that finger waggle. And he'd call you over to sit and rap with Johnny. And Norm MacDonald, in what was called the panel sessions, Norm MacDonald was simply the greatest panelist on TV talk shows as well. Just unbelievably smart. Talked about his faith, talked about being a Christian, but he certainly worked blue, and that didn't tone down his language at all. I certainly hope that that is a part of his life, as we are hearing that he had cancer, and that's what ended his life. I mean, the man's just a year older than me, 61 years old, but just to me, devastating news. And I'll tell you why. Talk radio. You've heard me talk about this quite often. The talk radio, I'm taking a sip, I'm not crying for a change. Talk radio is the most intimate of mediums because we, you and I, we are together one-on-one for as long as you can listen or as long as you choose to listen. It's a one-on-one, very intimate conversation. I've always avoided opening the show, hey, how are all of you today? That's not all of you. It's you. How are you doing today? And I've always been very careful about that because that's one of the beauties of talk radio. And Norm MacDonald employed a style of comedy where it was just, I could listen to it for hours on end. And starting a few years ago, I started finding all of these YouTube videos where it would be Norm MacDonald just going for 2-3 hours with somebody's talk show where he's a visitor. And that became, for a long, long, long time, that became my nighttime falling asleep type of entertainment to listen to. And when you admire somebody as much as I've admired Norm MacDonald, you undoubtedly try to steal some of his stuff, not consciously, but I'm sure that the stuff you find funny are things that you would like to integrate into your delivery, into how you prepare for a show. So in that regard, I cannot tell you the countless hours that I've spent listening to the man and analyzing what he does. And I know I've gone on way, way, way too long, but I just found out about this right before we went on the air. And it's for me, it's just heartbreaking news. But I'm hopeful that there's much more ahead for Norm MacDonald, who certainly talked openly about being a man of faith. So Norm MacDonald, just 61 years old, passing away today. We'll have a tribute later on this afternoon and play for you just a couple of the thousands of moments. And when he made moments, man, they were better than anybody's moments. It was just nobody could figure out where to use him. And he was great on Saturday Night Live doing the Weekend Update. But other than that, he did a couple movies. But he mostly was just someone who could be an intimate guest on whatever show he was on. So we'll talk more about the great Norm MacDonald a little bit later this afternoon. But we do have a lot of other stuff to get to involving you, your personal freedoms, what is going on in America. Let's get to today's top story.
The Big Lead, top story.
So over the 5 days that I was gallivanting around in Chelan, there was an awful lot happening in the country, an awful lot happening with our president, with our governor, Jay Inslee. Lots of new changes as we are masking up. They're making it almost impossible to function in this country unless you take the jab that they are making, for many people, mandatory. And as I was watching all of the coverage of this over the last 24 hours, I realized how absolutely frightening this is to me. Because we are not approaching. We are firmly entrenched in a place within America that I thought I would never see. but it is here with us. On Tucker Carlson's show last night, he was talking about, he's not an anti-vaxxer, but he respects people who have made the free-minded decision to hold off, especially with our kids. You know, I got the vaccine myself without hesitation. I didn't think my daughters needed it. They chose to. We talked about it. We talked about the pros and cons, the risk, the reward. If I had a younger boy, I would have pushed pretty hard for that kid to not get the vaccination. And so one of the things that was talked about last night is you have now a vaccine that has caused an awful lot of problems, especially for adolescent boys.
Do you know the vaccines are many times less effective than natural immunity in protecting people, and close to 100 million Americans already have natural immunity. We know that in some cases, the COVID vaccines cause potentially fatal heart problems in the people who take them. One new study shows that teenage boys are six times more likely to suffer cardiac damage from the shot than they are to be hospitalized with COVID itself.
Teenage boys six times more likely to have a cardiac episode than they would be hospitalized for COVID itself. So yes, I would be certainly wary of that. I would question that a lot if I was the parent of a kid that age. And then we have, you know, Joe Biden's announced, if you are in a company with 100 or more people, you must get the vax, or else you will be fired. And they say that'll cover in another 80 million Americans. Now, understand, an estimated 100 million have already gotten COVID in the last year and a half, and that provides natural immunities. There was an attempt for a debate about this a few months ago because Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, they didn't want to lose the stranglehold that they had on getting everybody vaccinated. But now they have to concede that, yes, your body's natural immunities are superior to the synthetic immunities presented by a virus. And so with that, you now have this announcement. If you work in a company of 100 or more, it's going to cover another 80 million people. You will get poked. And here's what's interesting. Here's one of many, many, many things that are interesting about this. It was just a few months ago when Joe Biden and Jen Psaki and Kamala Harris and all of them were telling us, well, we're never going to mandate the vaccine. It's just not what we do in America.
I'm announcing that the Department of Labor is developing an emergency rule to require all employers with 100 or more employees that together employ over 80 million workers to ensure their workforces are fully vaccinated or show a negative test at least once a week. We're going to protect vaccinated workers from unvaccinated coworkers. You've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us.
So refusal will not be tolerated. Now, these are, as I mentioned, these are the exact same people who were saying this just a few short months ago.
I don't think it should be mandatory. I wouldn't demand it be mandatory, but I would do everything in my power. Just like I don't think masks have to be made mandatory nationwide.
Can we mandate vaccines across the country? No, that's not a role that the federal government, I think, even has the power to make.
We cannot require someone to be vaccinated. That's just not what we can do. It is a matter of privacy to know who is or who isn't.
No, definitely not. You don't want to mandate and try and force anyone to take a vaccine. We've never done that. We don't want to be mandating from the federal government to the general population. It would be unenforceable and not appropriate.
So it's Anthony Fauci just in April saying that we will not mandate the vaccine. That was in April. Then you have Anthony Fauci this weekend saying, yeah, if you want to travel about this country, we're going to mandate it.
I think that if, in fact, it is seriously considered, it's on the table, we're not there yet.
And one of the ways that they are trying to achieve this goal is they are threatening people's jobs. We are told about a nursing shortage at hospitals around the country. And I do want you to carefully consider the fact that the nurses on the front line, the people who have been dealing with the COVID cases and seeing the horrific deaths that have been described too many times, the nurses are choosing to not get the vaccinated, knowing that they will be fired from their job if that happens. And here's a nurse talking about that very issue.
And one of the many ironies from his speech, at the very moment that Joe Biden accused the unvaccinated of this to patients because too many nurses had quit. Why did the nurses quit? Because the vaccine mandates. They left their jobs rather than get the COVID vaccine. Yesterday, to name one example, a hospital in New York stopped delivering babies. They can't deliver babies because too many nurses have fled from the mandate. In California, the already third world state of medicine has declined dramatically and become a full-blown crisis. California can't hire nurses from out of state because too few will come because they don't want the vaccine. One healthcare executive told Bloomberg News that only about half of his frontline nurses who treat COVID every day have received the COVID vaccination. The rest of those nurses have refused. Half. Again, these are people who treat COVID for a living. You can't dismiss them as uninformed. They know more than virtually anyone in the world about the subject. But they've refused the vaccine. Why?
Why? If they see the horrible ravages of coronavirus, and it's nurses who are in great numbers are refusing to take the vaccine, it is a fair question. Why? And I've not heard a satisfactory answer, other than the stuff that I cited earlier, that there are stats out there that suggest that for healthy people in a younger age range, it is more difficult. The vax presents more problems than it purportedly solves. We're going to talk about this an awful lot more throughout the afternoon. I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the passing of the great Norm MacDonald. Curious if any of you have anywhere near the same level of passion for the man that I was trying to convey at the beginning of the show, because this one hit me hard. How about this? A Democratic congressman, Adam Smith, he is going to join me next to talk about the bungling by Biden in Afghanistan and a lot more. We don't agree on anything, but I like it when politicians will come on and battle with me. And so the battle is coming up. Congressman Adam Smith versus me next. Don't miss this here on the Dory Monson Show. Divisive times, there are very few things that seem to bring us together as Americans. But one thing in which we seem to be united is that the withdrawal from Afghanistan seemed to have been bungled. By pulling out troops before we had all American citizens out, it has been several days now. It has been fraught with nothing but condemnation. Adam Smith is the Democratic congressman from our state who also is the chair of the House Armed Services Committee. He joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Congressman, it's always great to talk with you, sir.
Thanks, Dory. I appreciate the chance.
Is that a fair statement that no matter one's political perspective or social views, that it's pretty tough for somebody to get on board with how we got out of Afghanistan?
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair statement. I think it leaves a lot of things out, which I worry about, because it was 20 years of policy in Afghanistan that led us to this point. And one of the things my committee, the Armed Services Committee, is going to do is we're going to take a deep dive and figure out how did we get to this point. Because I think there's also a consensus in this country that we needed to get out of Afghanistan. So what led us to this point and what were the decisions made, not just in the last 6 months, but in the last 20 years, that led us to a place that I think none of us want to be.
And when will that navel gazing occur? Because I've heard a lot of people say now is not the time, that we need to focus on getting whatever it is, hundreds up to 1,000 of Americans trapped behind enemy lines. We're still doing this massive airlift of Afghani citizens, many of whom helped us as interpreters or drivers. So at what time is it appropriate for us to say we demand some answers as to how it could have gone down this way?
Well, several things. First of all, I wouldn't call it navel gazing because that basically implies that it's not worth doing. It is a hell of a lot more than navel gazing. It's looking at how we engage in the world, how we use our military. I think it's an incredibly important process, and it begins now. We're going to have several hearings week after next. The Senate Armed Services Committee, House Armed Services Committee, Foreign Affairs Committee is going to look at it. And I'm exploring various options to do a deep dive within the committee to look at this. Because, look, I think the thing that people need to understand is, the original goal in Afghanistan of removing the Taliban was sort of what we worked on for 20 years. The problem was we had to find an alternative to the Taliban to stop what is happening right now, which is them simply walking back into power. And personally, I think we underestimated the degree of difficulty in doing that and should have looked for other better options sooner.
Why do you think we underestimated the difficulty of who we were going to help install, if indeed that's what we were going to do? Because, Joe Biden is on the record back 20 years ago saying that you can't nation build in Afghanistan as we fly an estimated 65 to 95,000 Afghan refugees to this country. And we hope that they will assimilate, but they have lived lives and generational lives of nothing but warring factions, and now we're asking them to assimilate with the West. At what point are we going to be able to say maybe where we are today and what we're doing today with the airlift is still not a good idea?
Yeah, well, a couple things about that. I mean, first of all, I think the biggest reason why we did the exercise that we did and we were so reluctant to say, this is a failure, we're walking away, is because of the situation we're in right now. And this is something that I wish more people were talking about. Everyone sort of looks at it and goes, we're idiots. How could we be so stupid? How could we have done this? When in fact, the evidence of why we did it is right in front of us right now, because we didn't want what is happening in Afghanistan happening now. And that is the Taliban back in charge and all of the chaos and violence that comes with that. All the people that we know and have worked with who are suffering horribly under the Taliban. The risk to the United States of having an extreme, an Islamist extremist organization running a country, giving safe haven to terrorist groups. So people should understand the reason that we didn't want this outcome. And, that's why we wanted so badly to have a government succeed that wasn't the Taliban, and why we invested the resources in it that we invested. Certainly there are lessons to be learned there. But if the lesson is, oh, gosh, this was so easy, if we had just done this, that, and the other thing, everything would be fine, I think that's not going to help.
Well, and is it going to happen? I mean, is it even feasible? Because I heard a State Department statement last week where they said specifically, we have made clear to the Afghan people that they deserve an inclusive government. And when we take our Western mores and phrases like an inclusive government, which have become real buzzwords for us in America and for what we call the woke crowd, and to think that these warlords who have been the exact opposite of that for millennia, as they've been warring there, I just don't know how we could ever impose anything resembling a Western democracy over there.
We can't. I mean, I would put it slightly differently than you would. It's not just the woke crowd that's been running around the world saying, democracy is everybody's destiny and we can make it happen. There's a fair number of folks on the conservative side who, America is the greatest country on God's green earth. We'll share it with everybody else. I think the biggest thing we need to understand is to have a more modest approach to what can be done in the rest of the world. And the idea that we are supposed to impose solutions on people. But what drives a lot of this is, wouldn't the world be better if we all lived this way? Okay. We can debate that point. But what I hope we have learned is whether it would or not, we can't force it. We've got to work in an imperfect world and understand what those choices are.
So what we did, we established some precedents during Barack Obama's presidency when we negotiated with terrorists. We traded four Taliban members for
I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay? Why is that?
This is because, you know, the woke crowd and Obama, I mean, a lot of people on all points in the political spectrum made mistakes in here. I mean, you want to talk about negotiating with terrorists? I mean, Donald Trump negotiated with the Taliban and excluded the Afghan government. Now, I don't for a second think that the problems in Afghanistan are all because of the 4 years that Donald Trump was president. But when you
Fair
start
enough.
Walking down the road.
Okay, no, but what I'm saying, point. Congressman,
let's take a balanced approach to this.
Well, I'm trying to, and you're here to balance me out. You know, I'm cool if you're balancing me out. But my perspective, and then I'll let you balance my perspective, is that the Obama administration chose to negotiate with terrorists, and now we have four Taliban leaders associated with al-Qaeda that we had at Gitmo, and we traded them for Bo Bergdahl, somebody that an awful lot of members of our military view as a traitor. And now they are leading some operations that could result in some grave danger to the United States. Do you believe that it was a mistake for the Obama-Biden administration to negotiate with terrorists for the Bo Bergdahl?
Even if those four people weren't there, I'm reasonably confident that the Taliban would have other leaders that were every little bit as bad. So to imply that, oh my gosh, if we hadn't let these four people go, the Taliban would be great is ridiculous.
Well,
okay?
I have nobody saying that.
Well, I mean,
we're saying that these are horrible people who are in charge now.
And the other thing is, you know, let's not forget that Ronald Reagan was one of the first people to negotiate with terrorists. The idea that Obama did this negotiations with the Taliban, and it's the first time in the history of our government we've ever negotiated with bad people, is equally ridiculous. Every president has to make the choice as to what's in their best interest. How do you balance that out? And so the weight that you just put on one decision by the Obama administration is just not helpful, not accurate, and not correct.
Well, and I'll disagree respectfully, Congressman, because Ronald Reagan made those decisions.
You think that the negotiation, you think the fact that we traded four Taliban leaders for Bo Bergdahl is the definitive issue in the Afghanistan mess?
Well, that's not what I said. What I said is that they are now fighting and plotting with al-Qaeda to destroy the United States of America. We had them in custody, and my point was, Barack Obama made the swap 35 years ago, rightly or wrongly, but certainly, I'm sorry, Ronald Reagan made the swap 35 years ago. Rightly or wrongly, the Obama swap was the Obama-Biden administration, and I am telling you that I believe that is far more relevant to 2021 conversation than bringing up Ronald Reagan.
It is certainly more relevant. It's not much more relevant in terms of the grand scheme of everything that's going on with al-Qaeda and ISIS-K and the Taliban in Afghanistan. I would argue that it is vastly more relevant, the peace deal that Donald Trump negotiated with the Taliban that put us into a real tight little box here that admittedly the Biden administration didn't handle as well as they should. I think that is a 1,000% more relevant to the situation we're in right now.
No.
The peace deal that Donald Trump negotiated with the Taliban, and I don't see any credible way to argue otherwise.
Oh, I knew this was going to happen. We can never get everything in with Democratic Congressman Adam Smith in just one segment, but he has graciously agreed to spend the rest of the half hour with us. So hold on, Congressman, and our wide-ranging conversation with Democrat Adam Smith. He is the chair of the House Armed Services Committee, and we will continue the dialogue in just a moment as the Dory Monson Show continues. We are back with Congressman Adam Smith. He is the chair of the House Armed Services Committee. I would just like to get your response to what the temperature is like right now. By the State Department, 65,000 Afghan refugees. I've heard a number as high as 100,000 or more. We were told that they have been vetted. I simply do not believe that, Congressman. I saw how some were clinging to the planes and scrambling over rampways to get onto cargo jets. there certainly didn't appear to be any way they were being vetted, and they don't seem to have a nation that has real accurate record keeping. So how can we be sure that the 60,000, 80,000, whatever the number is, that are being flown into this country and kept, you know, with welfare and with education and with being housed on our military bases, things we don't do for our own military? How can we be sure that this is in America's best interest?
Well, first of all, the ones clinging to the planes are not part of the ones that got out of the country, as we very well know.
No, they're scrambling over bodies on the jetway or on the walkway.
Yeah, just want to clarify on that point. And second of all, I think this is a major challenge. We have, I don't know what the numbers are, well over 100,000 in a whole bunch of different countries. Some are in the U.S., some, you know, are in military U.S. military bases and other places, and some are being held by our allies. And I think it's really important that we sort through that as best as we can. But the basic principle here driving this is we want to help people who are in a desperate situation if we can. And, you know, these are, you know, look, all of Afghanistan is not crazy warlords trying to kill each other. And we saw that in the last 20 years. In fact, Admiral Stavridis had a pretty good editorial a few days ago about, you know, let's not forget the economic improvements in Afghanistan, the literacy improvements, the education improvements. A lot of people who had no future because the Taliban were in charge of the country before we got there. Something a lot of my friends on the left conveniently forget.
But is all of that lost now with the takeover and the rollback of rights for women?
I mean, I think a lot of it is lost. I don't think all of it's lost. Certainly the economy of Afghanistan is better now than it was, you know, 25 years ago. There are people who have opportunity. But yes, a good chunk of it is lost, which is, again, why so many people were so reluctant to let it get lost. But to your point, you know, I think, you know, we have to do everything we can to try to help those people resettle. Now, they're not going to all resettle in the United States.
Right.
Some of them are going to resettle elsewhere. But I don't know. I think in the U.S., refugees, immigrants, you know, people coming from desperate situations trying to make better lives for themselves, by and large, has been a positive for this country.
As you know, I always appreciate you coming on because I think conversations like this between people who are somewhat well-informed, you're much better informed than I. You're in these high-level intelligence meetings all the time. But I think these are very helpful. But I do say something, I have said something rather consistently as we're wrapping this thing up, Congressman. I believe that Joe Biden is facing some form of dementia, and where it is on that spectrum, I do not know. But I lost my mother to dementia. My wife and I lost to her dad, father-in-law. And from what I'm seeing, and I compare it, it's not that he just stutters. When I compare Joe Biden of 2021 to speeches in 2016 even, but certainly 12 and 08, this is a different human being. And that scares the heck out of me, Congressman.
Yeah,
if he's making decisions, getting people blown up, and if we're allowing people who may have terror intents coming into our country. Go ahead.
I've been watching Joe Biden for, gosh, I saw him give a speech in 1986 in Florida. I don't agree with all of his decisions, but I think that is fear-mongering of the worst order. I mean, that's just like, you know, the left wing kept saying that about Trump. You know, oh, he's, you know, certifiably insane. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, this sort of stuff does not help the dialogue. I see no evidence whatsoever that Joe Biden has any form of dementia. I agree with some of his decisions. I disagree with others. You know, look, he has always talked a lot in a rambling, whole bunch of different directions.
Not like this.
Yeah. I don't see any evidence of it. And I certainly don't think it helps public discourse to imply that without pretty solid evidence.
Okay.
And Joe Biden, that's just not where he's at. I hope we can stay focused on the issues and how we can get to a better place.
As you acknowledge, Donald Trump was impeached twice. There were many people who called for the 25th Amendment to be invoked.
Right.
Do you believe that we are anywhere near that with Joe Biden?
Yeah. No. And look, this Trump wasn't impeached for being mentally crazy. He was. We all know what he was impeached for, and it wasn't for dementia.
Right. One of them was for a phone call, and now that we're getting some results or some details about Joe Biden's phone call with Afghan leaders, it certainly sounds far worse than what Trump ever did.
Yeah. I really wish we could avoid this stuff and actually talk about the public policy that's going forward here. That's
okay,
important.
Last public policy, because I consider this, and I truly had respect for Trump and Obama and George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. I wasn't afraid of any of them.
I don't remember you having a ton of respect for Obama.
Not a ton of respect, but I wasn't afraid of them.
You and I having a big debate over
your
summary is that Obama was an empty suit, period.
That's an accurate quote, but I wasn't afraid of him.
You said that with respect.
I said it to say it. I mean, I really did feel that in many regards, his policies were so far out of touch. But you said you want to stay on the here and now, and that's what I'm trying to do here. So what I do see is a porous southern border. I see us flooding our economy with trillions of dollars that your kids and my kids and their kids are going to have to pay off someday. I see how Afghanistan was horribly botched. And, Congressman, I do fear that we are in a significant vacuum of leadership right now. I'll give you the last word.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a better way to say it. I don't necessarily agree with that.
Well, that's where I was going if you hadn't cut me off.
No.
Crying out loud.
Look, no, that's not where you were going. You were going with, you know, President Biden is demented. He's lost his mind. That's a hell of a lot different than saying he needs a better policy on the southern border. So when I come back on, we can talk more about those policies. But, you know, let's not go spinning conspiracy theories about dementia. Let's actually talk about the policies that are being implemented, because I think there's a lot to discuss there.
Okay. I'll have you on more regularly if you'll bring me out to give more speeches to Congress. How about that?
Yeah, I don't have that power, but thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, I do. So we'll talk again. I really appreciate every time you come on with me, Congressman.
Thanks, sir. I appreciate the chance.
Thanks for the conversation. All right. Congressman Adam Smith, Democrat from our region. All right. You've just heard some pretty passionate viewpoints on a couple sides of the most interesting issue in the country. Love to hear your thoughts on what you just heard. You can text us at 98973. 98973. We'll check the news and then lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show.